The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Quinn is the latest gripping inside story of Sean Quinn, Ireland's bankrupt billionaire who went from rags to riches and then gambled his fortune on Anglo-Irish Bank shares and became the world's biggest personal loser of the economic collapse of 2008. Trevor Burney's Quinn is the product of 4 years of investigative journalism, expanding and amplifying on his acclaimed documentary Quinn Country, as well as drawing on off-the-record witnesses who were unwilling to be filmed for that television programme. Trevor has joined me in studio. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, for the purposes of this exercise, let's assume people have not seen the three-parter, although I suspect many, many people have. It's gripping, it's compelling. Talk to me about Sean Quinn, because by origin, he was dirt poor.
He was. Sean Quinn was born into a border community, and his father was a farmer, and brought up Sean and his brother Peter, who obviously went on to become president of the GAA, and two sisters. And, you know, it really was a dirt poor existence. And his father died in 1967, just before Christmas. And I think that was a real moment in Sean's life. He had left school. He'd left school at 11. He had been sent off to what we know in the North as the 11 plus or the transfer test. And he'd hid in a ditch and decided not to get on the bus to go to Enniskillen for the exam that day. And he came back and his mother wasn't very pleased. She was someone who, without any education, she was very well known in the area, someone who knew how to handle business and handle the farm for the father. And
she helped people in the locality.
She did, yeah. And doing their books and all of that. So he was afraid of his mother, but his father said, oh, listen, he'll stay home with me and he'll help milk the cows and he'll help on the farm. 1967, Sean's father died. He had a heart condition and died. And I think that then really was a moment in Sean's life to work out what he was going to do.
Yeah.
And he inherited the farm. Peter had left to go off to university. The sisters were off at university pursuing their lives. And it was left to Sean alone.
Now, when I said he came from a dirt poor background, the father was a very good businessman. In spite of having no education, he was good at striking a deal and made the best of his lot.
He did. You know, the father was very well known around the area as a farmer who went to the market and made sure he got a good deal for his cattle. And he had bought the land. The father had raised £2,000 in order to buy the land that the Quinns were brought up on. He had tried to buy another farm on the border, but actually in that case he lost out, which was basically down to local sectarianism. You know, Protestants didn't want to see people like the Quinns buying the land, and there was a meeting and the Quinns lost out and the father lost out. And that kind of, the children inherited that moment and understood what had happened to them. And, you know, and that became something of a touchstone for the family.
It's very interesting reading about this, particularly in the light of Alan Duke's comments and so on about violence on the border, which was real because they lived the troubles. There's no question about it. But it's interesting that their hinterland, in a sense, didn't recognise the border. I mean, it was Derry Lynn, but it was also Ballyconnell in south of the border. So it's something maybe that we in Dublin don't understand.
The border is something that is tangible in a way to people who live there, but also invisible. You know, what they do is that they learn how to live with the border, learn how to exist with the border, learn how to use the border, abuse the border. That's the existence of people who live there. And of course, in any land border, there's always going to be an issue around smuggling. And whether it's back in the 50s or 60s about bringing cigarettes left, you know, to north or south or whatever, or petrol or sheep or whatever it was, there was always that kind of culture on the border. There's no doubt about it. Now, that's still a long way.
Even Father Brian Darcy violence. Told me on one of our programmes that as a child, he was smuggling butter across the border. Every child did, you know, it was one of those things.
It was just used to that, you know, on a Sunday you would go across and you might bring something back onto the rug in the back of the car.
Now, that's the milieu. So what was the trigger besides his father's death? And he clearly learnt a lot from his father about cutting a deal. What was the trigger that led him into, the foundations of his success, if you pardon the building pun, but that was quarrying?
It was indeed. Well, when he inherited his father's farm, he decided that actually, you know, farming really wasn't going to be for him. Despite the hopes of his mum, despite the hopes of his family and expectations that Sean would really take off where the father left off, take off where the father had left off. But after a while in those latter years of the 60s, Sean decided, actually, we looked round at families like the Mittens and the McCaffreys and the Currys and realised these families were actually making good money out of, not by farming, but by digging down into the shale. And that area of the border for was well known for the shale that was being extracted. So Sean began in a very small way with basically, you know, a tractor and a digger, began to dig down and sell off the shale to local businesses and farmers. But in 1969, you know, the family farm was on the mountain road and right beside the football pitch, right beside Timor Shamrocks, and the ball was kept in the Quinn home, and they lived very cheek by jowl with the football team, and it was, became very much part of the Quinn family for Peter and Sean. Peter was much smaller than Sean. He had suffered some ill health as a teenager. Sean was much bigger and stronger, and he became the captain of the team. And in 1969, for the first time in over 30 years, Timor Shamrocks won the Fermanagh Championship, and that was a very seminal moment for Sean Quinn. He captained that team. He became a leader in that community. People respected him. He saw, he grew in respect. He could see that actually, you know, that people looked up to him now for having this great success. And then what he did, as any great businessman would do, he then flipped it and used it for his network. So he realised that, hang on, there is now a community of people who know me for football and I'm trying to build a business. And he tapped into that GAA network right on the border.
Now, his success, it happened over a decade. But, you know, piece by piece, he started to do different things. I mean, from quarrying, you got to cement, you got to glass, you got to roof tiles. He bought Barlow and, you know, Dermot Desmond was involved in that particular transaction. He kept moving all the time. He was insuring his own fleet of trucks, which was enormous. And he thought, why am I paying someone else? No, I'll insure myself. And then he set up an insurance company.
And I think that, you know, everything you've just said, Pat, is very true. And in fact, you know, somebody quipped, you know, basically Sean Quinn could build your house. He could put in, you know, he could give you the bricks and the mortar and the cement, and he can give you the windows, and he could put in the radiators.
Give you electricity from his wind farm.
Tiles, and you get electricity, you know. And, in many ways, a lot of those homes that you'll see on that border area between Derrylaugh, Ballyconnell, Belturbet, you know, they're all built by Sean Quinn, you know, whether it was through the labour of those who went to work for him, who were able to build not only homes but careers. And you know, you got to remember that was a very barren area. You know, he was a one-man industrial development board right there, and really for the large part of the business throughout the 70s and 80s did it without a shilling from anyone else. He really was through his own graft. It's only when he began to build the cement factory then that he started to look at what kind of subsistence can I get from north or south.
As a result of his collapse, and I'm just flipping forward for a moment, we are all paying a premium on our insurance, on our non-life insurance, or insure a house or whatever. We are paying a premium because of Quinn's collapse. But in a funny way, earlier on in the development of the Quinn insurance vehicle, 9/11 was good to him.
9/11 was very good to him. And actually, you know, the business at that stage up until 2001, I mean, the insurance business is really was a huge success. But really what it really was Sean Quinn's downfall in many ways, because, you know, it was a regulated entity for the start. And Sean Quinn obviously didn't like regulation, you know, no doubt. He was a guy who was a disruptor. He had taken on, you know, the cement giants of CRH, Cement Roadstone Holdings. He had, you know, taken on glass. He'd disrupted these businesses, not only here in Ireland, but also in the UK. So this is a guy who, you know, move fast and break things, as if it's in California. And then he got into insurance for the very reason that you explained. But then what he discovered is that he had an investment pot, you know, the insurance premiums that were being paid by everyone who insured the cars. And I remember in Fermanagh at the time, you know, when you were a 17, 18 year old, Sean Quinn's business were the only business we were prepared to insure those. So it became a word of mouth business right on the border area. Yeah. Sean Quinn was the one.
The reason was all about reinsurance. After the big payouts of 9/11, very few insurance companies take all the risk. They spread the risk to others, to reinsurers, and so it goes. It's a pyramid in a sense.
Absolutely. And up until 2001, whenever 9/11 happened, Sean Quinn had already got into a spot of bother with the regulator, because he'd started to use the investment pot, and he'd really gone down the rabbit hole on the dot-com boom and bust, where he lost, millions of £1,000. And he had been warned about the regulator about his behaviour, and he had to stand back from, you know, managing the investment pot. Then 9/11 happened and the insurance business took off. He was into risk. Any other insurer was standing back from risk. Sean Quinn was there. He was taking on all sorts of fancy kind of insurance policies that you wouldn't dream of. And that really stoked that business for the following 5 or 6 years.
Now, the money was just enormous.
Huge.
I mean, the cement business, the glass business, they were all making profits. So that money was fine. But the insurance was like a goose that kept laying golden eggs. Now, did he fall foul of, you know, prudential, shall we say, running of his business? Because one of the things about insurance, you got to think about the catastrophic possibilities. If you insure, for example, professional indemnity for doctors or whatever, there could be a million, 2 million, £3 million payment that would suddenly fall upon you when your man or your woman has only paid maybe 30 grand in premiums.
And that is, and there is a, you know, that's why you need actuaries and you need people who understand the mathematics between somebody paying in a policy and what the potential risk is. You know, ultimately, when everybody paid their policies, a lot of that money that was there had to go into reserve. And obviously, when the CFDs began to go south after St. Patrick's Day financial massacre, the world economic collapse in 2008, Sean Quinn had to, first of all, he burned through 750 million of his own money or the company's money, and then he began to go into the pot that was reserve pot in the insurance, and that's when it all started to go wrong.
And that's where it all started to go wrong. Now, the contracts for difference, I mean, my daughter was asking me, what is that? Explain, please. And I said, well, you know, suppose you've McDonald's burgers shares for a dollar, and you think that they're going to improve because more and more people are going to buy burgers. Well, you agree to buy a whole pile of McDonald's shares for a dollar, but you only have to put 10 cents down as a deposit. And then they go up to 150 and you flog them all at 150, and then you have enough money to pay what you owe, you know, the rest of the money for the shares. But you've got 50 cent profit for every share. Brilliant. If they go up. If they go down to 50 cent instead of going up to 150, you owe 50 cent and you can't sell the shares, you can't get the money, so you're deep in the hole.
And that's exactly what happened to Sean Quinn. You know, the Anglo-Irish shares went up, and at one stage he could have cashed out at about 200 million of profit. If he'd cashed in at 200 million, walked away, reinvested. But again, what Sean Quinn had done in the dot-com boom, he did again. You know, he was invested in Ryanair. He had a very well, you know, a spectrum of shares in terms of risk that he was, but he cashed in them all and put all the bet on Anglo-Irish. And when the shares started to drop from 17 euro, I think, at its peak, when it started to drop, Sean Quinn then decided, actually, there is still some value. I believe that not only will they recover, but they will increase. And the reason he was doing that, and it's very simple in some ways, Sean Quinn was devouring every single statement that Anglo-Irish made. He was devouring their annual reports. He saw himself in that bank. He saw this was a bank that actually had built itself up and been a very small bank, to taking on the establishment, to challenging, to disrupting. And that's what he saw. He saw that this bank is going to keep going, and didn't see actually the storm on the horizon.
He doubled down and he lost it all. It meant that he lost his businesses. Now, he seems to feel that people were out to get him. Have a listen to this clip where he's quite bitter. This is from your documentary, and he feels he was scapegoated.
Why are you getting rid of one of the three or four best businessmen in the history of the state? Why do you want rid of him? What I'm saying is, they knew at the time that those loans were illegal. And everybody allowed this 2.3 billion to be loaned illegally. So where did the Irish government or anybody sit in all of this? We, the government, we regulate the banks. And we allowed this guy to do this. So I think they were caught in the headlights. Well, the only thing we can do with him now is kill him off. Take it all off him, and dead men don't talk. And he won't talk because he'll be gone. He'll have no money to fight us. We'll sell him all the bills, and we'll throw up old tax bills, and we'll throw the kitchen sink at him for the next 2 or 3 years, and we'll bury him.
Now, that's an extraordinary kind of bit of self-delusion in a way, isn't it? That he was the architect of his own misfortune.
He does feel that fundamentally Sean Quinn believes that if he was left to his own devices, he would have dug himself out of the hole. And that's, he still believes that. He believed that in the first time I met him, and he still believes that today. There is no doubt that he believes that if the insurance company had been left there and untouched, and if the businesses were left there, he could have repaid everything that he owed. That's his firm belief. And he believes, obviously he believes that there was a conspiracy against him to take everything off him in order to bury him and make sure that he became the poster child for everything that went wrong in the Celtic Tiger, that Sean Quinn was to blame for it all, that he was the gambler who had cost the state and still costing everyone who takes out an insurance policy that 2% levy. So, but he believes that he was one of the greatest businessmen in Ireland, and there's no doubt about that. He has been an incredible
figure. Very risk-taking that got him where he was, all the success, that risk-taking with Anglo led to his downfall.
There is no doubt, and there are some people around Sean Quinn who said that he only ever saw the upside, he never saw the risk. He only ever looked at CFDs and went, this is what I could end up earning. Never looking at, yeah, but Sean, this is what you could end up losing. Yeah. He didn't see the downside. He always saw the upside. And in some ways, that's if you're a businessman or an entrepreneur like Sean Quinn, you've got to always see the upside. You've got to be prepared, but you've got to take obviously strategic risk and understand the risk that you're taking.
He then lost his companies. I mean, that's what happened. Then there was a very violent period in the area. What happened?
Well, yeah, I mean, in 2011, he lost the Quinn Group. The insurance company was already gone. And then the Alan Jukes, who at that stage then became chairman of IBRC, believed that there wasn't a deal to be done with Sean Quinn. There wasn't a deal to be struck. He didn't believe that there was any way back at that stage. And he then sent the liquidators in to take over the Quinn Group. And, you know, 100 or so security personnel from Dublin moved north of the border and seized the business. And Sean Quinn believes that April 2011, when the businesses were taken over, the fact that Alan Jukes and the decisions were taken to take over the company sparked a reaction locally. This was a community that had British Army patrols, that had British Army checkpoints, that they knew what it was like to be the freedom to be in some way taken away by having others from outside the area come in. So Sean Quinn and many people on the border believe that that moment caused a reaction, and very quickly that reaction came. Started off quite small, dumper trucks being driven into the side of buildings and all of that. And then over 2011 to 2014, there was a very significant period of violence and harassment and intimidation. And that was designed for a number of very strategic reasons. One, to devalue those businesses on the border. Two, to ensure that nobody else would actually come in and buy those businesses. And there were attempts to buy off the businesses, and the bondholders were very interested in trying to return. Because Sean Quinn, never mind owing 2.4 billion to the Irish taxpayers, also owed 1.2 billion or more to a series of bankers in America, bondholders. Mm-hmm. And they were the ones that ended up in control of his businesses on the border, and they were very interested, just as any other liquidator do, is sell off those businesses, get as much for them and move on. But of course the violence prevented that, because nobody wanted to get involved given the violence on the border in those businesses.
It's a complex tale. Quinn comes back into the business as a consultant with a very fat pay packet, you know, $500,000 as a consultant, but immediately, you know, presuming that he'd be the boss, which he wasn't, he was a consultant. He fell out with them.
Well, I think that, you know, listen, in those circumstances, a management buyout or a MBO was very natural part of the process. If you ended up owning a business and you were trying to distress business and you're trying to work out what to do with it, you'd be talking to the management and saying, do you want to put together a bid? And that's really what happened as a result of an attack on Kevin Lagan, a Belfast businessman who was interested in buying. When he disappeared because of all the threats and everything and the attacks on his business, the bondholders then turned to the MBO and turned to the management in the company. There was a problem. Sean Quinn was bankrupt, so he couldn't be part of that deal at that time. But Sean Quinn came in, and I think absolutely, he walked back into his office thinking, nothing has changed. I'm the guy. Everyone now is working to me. But of course, the management were now absolutely in charge. They were the shareholders. They were running the business. And Sean Quinn really couldn't adapt, couldn't see how much things had changed, and then began a process which ultimately led to his fall out, and the second coming wasn't the great new dawn.
Finally, because we've talked long and hard about this, and I would recommend the three-part documentary, which is available on the RTE player, and also the new book, which is simply called Quinn. A lot of fine detail there. I suppose the Kevin Lunny attack was what lost Sean Quinn community support, ultimately.
The attack on Kevin Lunny changed everything irreversibly, and Sean Quinn in the weeks after it recognised that and realised that there was, you know, there was just a complete loss of support. You know, that people in the street who would have been his supporters before then were simply crossing the street, were not prepared to engage with him.
It's important to say that he denies that he ordered this thing. You know, he wasn't Mr. Big.
Categorically. He has denied it all the way through, that from the moment of the attack to the last time I ever spoke to Sean Quinn. It's absolutely nothing to do with it. It's nothing to do with him. He isn't the paymaster. Absolutely not. But listen, the attack on Kevin Lunny for that community, and don't forget, that community has been traumatised. This is a community that really celebrated the success of Sean Quinn for 30, 40 years. And then for the last 10 or 15 years, that community that's relied on those businesses for their wealthhood. And you could have, Pat, in many homes, you had the mum and dad and the children all employed by Sean Quinn's businesses. Can you imagine what was going on around those dinner tables when they could see that Sean Quinn was losing the businesses, then potentially other companies were going to come in and shut down some of those businesses. So that trauma that's been inflicted, which right up the Kevin Lunny attack, I mean, I think that, you know, really those border communities in many ways are victims of all of this as well, and still living with the instability that's been caused.
Well, it's a terrific series, and it's a brilliant book. It's published by Merrion Press. It's available right now, and it's simply called Quinn. You can't mistake it, because there's a picture of Sean Quinn on the cover. It's author and the author of the documentary series, Trevor Burney. Trevor, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.
Thanks, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.